It's Christmas Eve, 1974, in Prairie Grove, Arkansas. Thomas Duncan has had one hell of a year. He's 11 years old at this point, and he went through something that most of us, certainly at that age, had never have gone through, which was the loss of his best friend due to suicide earlier in the year from extreme bullying and teasing by Thomas's own next-door neighbor, Brad Flink. Brad was a bully who was, you know, never-ending in his assaults on the kids smaller and defenseless to him. Max, who was Thomas's best friend, just couldn't take it anymore and unfortunately hung himself. Now, as I said, this was an extremely difficult year for Thomas because, you know, obviously he lost his best friend, was going through a very hard time. And on top of that, after Max had left, and most everyone had known that Brad was responsible for this because of the bullying, but back then there wasn't a whole lot anyone could do in manners like that. It wasn't like today. It just, life kind of went on, unfortunately. You know, Max was gone, but everybody continued to live. Now, after Max's passing, you would think that maybe Brad would step back and realize what he'd done and how bad his bullying had affected this man's or this kid's life. But he did the opposite. He turned his focus on Thomas. And day in and day out, picked on him, teased him, called him names, and beat him up. Now, the big thing in Tom's life was Christmas. His family was very, very into the holiday of Christmas. And he was excited for this Christmas because after such a horrible year, the one thing he was happy to know was spending time with his family, celebrating the holidays, opening his presents, and trying to move past the tragedy. On Christmas Eve, he was out back working on crafts. Now, it wasn't very cold this year in Arkansas, and he was working on a craft that he was making for his mom and dad, and he was out back because they wouldn't see it. They were busy getting everything prepared for Christmas, and he made this beautiful piece that he, it was in honor of his parents and to show them how much he loved them. Now, he was so caught up in his own work that unfortunately he didn't hear the gate latch lift behind him, didn't hear Brad coming across his yard, and next thing he knows, Brad picks up his craft, his you know, homemade present that he'd worked for hours on for his parents, and he breaks it over his knee into multiple pieces. Just one more display of how ruthless this bully was. Now, Brad grew up in a broken home. He lived only with his father, and Brad, his father, his name was Paul, was an extreme alcoholic and would beat on Brad the way Brad, in return, would then beat on children younger and smaller than him. Generational, you know, programming of sorts. Now, at this point, this was the last straw, and Thomas just couldn't take it any further. He went in the house crying, very upset, but a rage started inside of him that he'd never felt prior to that. And he remembered reading about this creature, this being, that took away bad kids on Christmas Eve. The name of that creature was the Krampus. He closed his eyes, went silent in his mind, and called out to this creature that if it was real, to please come and take this kid away, to end this bullying, to end this suffering, to get payback for his friend Max and for what he has gone through and so many other kids at his elementary school had gone through. They were soon to go to high school. And he couldn't imagine going to high school and having to deal with this kid on top of all the struggles of joining a new school, all of the new people. So he closed his eyes and he called out to this creature. Day went on as normal. He finally went back downstairs, picked up the broken pieces of his craft and began to work it again from scratch, and was able to finish it this time in his basement without anybody noticing, without Brad being around. Later that night, he heard a commotion. His room was actually adjacent from where Brad's was at the neighboring house. But there was a very heavy storm going on, very windy that night, and it began to snow. But what he heard didn't make sense, and when he looked out his window, he seen terror in Brad's eyes and face across the way in his room. Hiding, trying to fight back something. No one else was hearing that because I'm sure Paul at that time was probably passed out on the couch as normal. His parents were in bed sleeping soundly and being drowned out by the storm. Next thing he knows, the back door of the house swings open and he sees a creature dragging Brad across the backyard through the snow, claw marks in the snow from Brad gripping at anything he can to try to stop from being taken away. He's screaming. He looks upwards and actually catches the glance of Thomas looking out the window at him, yelling to please help. Thomas just stands there, partially frozen from the fear, but also at the same time watching what he had wished for so eagerly. He drags him further and further into the woods, and Brad was never seen again. Now, when the detectives came, started questioning this the next morning as Brad's father woke up and he was not there, and time went by and he didn't see him, and they began to worry and he called the police. They started asking and questioning the neighbors. First, it kind of happened kind of in a holiday spirit, I guess you could say. They were sitting in the living room opening presents and they seen red and blue flashing lights, which, you know, around Christmas time could be anything. But then when they looked out their front window, they noticed multiple cop cars being there. It was taken very seriously right from the get-go because Brad's dad didn't go upstairs at first. He just knew his son wasn't there when he yelled for him, thought he went out to do something. A little bit later on, he went up to his bedroom and noticed everything was flipped over, noticed there was claw marks going across the door, not from the creature, but from Brad himself clawing once again at anything he could to try to stop this thing from taking him. It led into the woods, and the only thing that they found from Brad was his one tennis shoe laying at the foot of a hollowed-out tree trunk. As they questioned the neighbor on the other side, Rick had said he kept a trail cam in the woods because there was a monster buck that he was telling his friends about and they wanted to see pictures, so he would take his trail cam, stick it out there, and try to capture pictures of these deer. He was an avid hunter. He says, maybe I caught something in my trail cam. So the detectives looked at the trail cam, and the only thing that they caught at a strange angle was Brad being drugged, screaming in terror. They did not see what was dragging him, but the only thing they caught from the angle that they had was one very large, furry, fuzzy hand with long, dark claws. That was the last anybody had ever seen or heard of Brad. Thomas never was bullied again. He never told his secret to anyone. But he couldn't help but think that sometimes evil must combat evil for the greater good.
Are ghosts real? Several recent encounters suggest there might be more things in heaven and earth than we can dream of.
So are werewolves just a Hollywood creation, or do half-man, half-wolf creatures really exist? Now, tonight, we kick off our Conspiracy Theory Month series, which was a...
The legend of the vampire actually goes back for centuries, and it exists in some form or another in almost every culture. In fact, some people believe the first vampire story was in the Bible.
Well, for decades, only crackpots and crazy people believed in UFOs. That's what I thought, anyway. And then in recent years, turns out that governments have been taking them seriously all along.
Try and clear up an ancient mystery with the help of a prominent veterinarian who says she can prove that Bigfoot exists and that he's related to all of us.
New reports by pilots coming forward over the weekend saying they've had multiple mid-air encounters with high-flying, fast-moving objects.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for tuning in to Season 3, Episode 5 of Celestial Oddities, the Pong Pair of Normal Guys podcast, brought to you by Brutal Business and Celestial Oddities Radio, bringing you 100% real and raw underground entertainment. As always, I will be your host, Reverend Fredo Crow.
And I'm your co-host, Daniel James.
And if you're listening out there right now, whether listening live, streaming after the fact, or you've downloaded this to your device for on the go, thank you for your patronage and support. Make sure you click the like, share, and follow button on whatever platform you are tuning in from, whether it be iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Deezer, Spreaker, CastBox, Google Play, Amazon Podcasts, or any of the other platforms in between that I might have missed. We air across everywhere, so feel free to listen where you like, but by clicking those buttons, it moves us up the podcast community rankings, allows more people to discover the show, keeps you in the loop with our new episodes as they air, and gives you unfiltered access to our past archives, not only of this show, Celestial Oddities The Pong, which deep dives into supernatural and paranormal phenomena, talking about subject matter, bringing on professionals within this field, or even our special episodes taking on phone calls from around the world from people just like you to hear your extraordinary stories of the strange and unusual. Or it'd be one of our other shows like Knights of the Nephilim, based upon esoteric science, occult doctrine, or ritual magic, interviewing and talking with practitioners, ritual toolmakers, theologians, and authors. Or it'd be our last show, Uncovering the Underground, where we talk with and interview artists from music to modeling, stars of the big screen, comedy, oddities, and everything in between. We always aim to please here at Celestial Oddities Radio, bringing you great underground content. So make sure you click those buttons to help spread us around. Tell a friend, tell a neighbor. We really appreciate it. We air every other, normally Thursday night. The last few weeks have been kind of scattered with different things going on in Daniel and I's life, with holidays and things of that nature. Obviously, tomorrow is Thanksgiving, so thanks, you know, happy Thanksgiving to all of you. But we didn't think it'd be too appropriate to have a show on Thanksgiving night. So we have been kind of bouncing around. So if you follow our pages, Celestial Oddities Radio on Facebook, you can keep track of all of our events when they're happening. If we're doing an odd night, you'll see the date of the event. But normally, we will soon be going back to our normal every other Thursday night. And we air from 8:30 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And on the weeks in between, we air Knights of the Nephilim. Come the end of January, these two seasons will end, Knights of Nephilim and Celestial Oddities. And Uncovering the Underground will pick back up and be every week for a few months. And then season four of our shows that we're talking about now will continue. So as you see, we're constantly rotating, bringing you 50 brand new episodes of radio a year out of the 52 years. We try to keep you guys busy with content. So thank you so much. Make sure you share it around. And hopefully you guys enjoyed the intro this evening. We have a wonderful topic, Daniel. I'm very excited about tonight's show.
Yeah, man, I'm ready to go.
Folks, if you heard the intro, we are talking about the Krampus. Is it myth? Is it legend? Is it lore? Or is it truth? And we're going to deep dive a little bit into this evening because there's a lot to unpack here. You know, a lot of people know of Krampus or the Krampus because of the movies that were created several years back. If you do your research or you know about it just in general, you would know that it has existed for a very, very long time, and the movies were just something created, you know, years back as something of horror for people out there who like something different around the holidays, as kind of a horror Christmas movie. Now, it originally extends from Germany, and the Krampus is said to be a half-goat, half-demon creature who was originally celebrated and praised during the winter solstice by pagan cults. And you could say it's a satyr of some sort due to the fact that it's a half-goat, half-man, or half-demon creature, kind of like Pan is to the Greeks and you know, other satyrs that you'd see in the woods, or, you know, very reminiscent of what a lot of Christian tales will talk about with devils and demons, how they're half-goat creatures. This is very similar to how they attribute the Krampus as well, is being a fuzzy, furry-like goat-man demon. You know, I find it interesting because there's a lot of parallels here to a lot of other things. You know, Krampus is commonly associated with St. Nicholas, and they're almost two sides of one coin, where you would have the good and the bad, where the good kids would be celebrated and given gifts by St. Nicholas on December 6th, but the night before on December 5th was Krampusnacht, Krampus night. And that would be when the bad children were punished. Some tales talk about the children simply being beaten with sticks and being slapped around a little bit. Some talk about the children being eaten or murdered or drug away to hell. But there was this fear, this good and evil, the bad children will suffer, the good children will be praised. You know, they tell you now, and later on it would kind of be converted a little bit differently, because as we said, December 5th and December 6th, that's earlier than Christmas, but that's when they celebrated St. Nicholas and Krampusnacht. Later on, it would be more Christianized, as it already was, and we'll get to that in a moment, but it'd be more Christianized and become Santa Claus. And Santa Claus's date would be December 25th, but they would still keep some tradition with Krampus and make his night December 24th, Christmas Eve. And it is still said that he punishes the bad and naughty children, and Santa Claus would be given gifts to the good. Now, Krampus, you know, it's very interesting because he comes from the word Krampen. Krampen means claw. So his name literally is derived from the imagery of his giant, enormous claws. Now, a lot of times you'll hear people refer to it as you know, single, like I just did, but it's in fact said that there's an entire race of these creatures, almost like the Sasquatch. There is a race of these very demonic-y, satyr-type beings with long claws that come out. There's not just one. You know, that's how they're able to cover so much ground and take so many children or punish so many children in one night, is because there are many of them. And what's interesting is that this being was actually celebrated before St. Nicholas. The Christian church stepped in and wanted to abolish Krampus altogether, but the pagans who were converting to Christianity would not let go fully of their traditions. So it kind of got hybrided together to bring upon this half-good, half-evil creature, or two sides of it, I should say. And that's where you got the two, the Krampus and St. Nick. And then it became even more Christianized and became Santa Claus. But it was originally that St. Nicholas and Krampus worked together. They weren't necessarily opposing forces. They actually were both working for the same thing, just different purposes. And then later on, it would be that they were very different. Santa Claus has nothing to do with Krampus. Krampus is just a creature who takes care of the naughty children. Now, I'm telling you all this to give you kind of a backstory of how the Krampus came to be, and to give you a little bit of other information, which might be vital to a lot of people out there. Some of our listeners out there are probably like, I knew some of this, or I knew all of this, but this next part you might not know a whole lot about. And there are very heavy parallels of Krampus to a spirit or deity that was actually prior to Krampus. Which
That's
was
right.
Perkta. And Perkta.
Ooh, I have a different name for it, but I'll wait my turn.
And she does actually have multiple names across different cultures, but the Perkta was a female spirit that was also celebrated by pagans. I think celebrated some for honor and celebrated some for fear because they were afraid of her. And this is a little bit more intense than Krampus. I mean, you'll hear Krampus, oh, they take the children away, they beat them with sticks, they'll eat them. Okay, that's all kind of horrifying. But Perkta was a little bit different. Perkta would appear to good children as a beautiful woman in all white. For good children, you would wake up in the morning with a coin or something of equivalent, you know, next to your bed as a thank you for being a hardworking children. Now, she didn't necessarily just do it for being good. You had to have worked hard all year, done your duties, done your chores, and stayed strong all year long. But for the naughty children, she disemboweled them. She cut their stomach open, pulled out their innards and guts, and replaced it with straw before sewing them back up and leaving them in their beds to be discovered in the morning. She would also do this to anybody who ate foods that day, her day, prior or outside of the scope of what she allowed to be eaten. And if she discovered that the children had eaten something outside of that, she would once again disembowel them, fill their stomach with straw, and I forgot to mention pebbles, and sew them back up and leave them there to be found. And then for those children, when she was seen, or people who had seen her do this to these children, supposedly, as the lore goes, she would appear as a very terrifying, wrinkly old hag, very reminiscent of what you would imagine, like the depictions of old evil witches looking like. That's what Perkta looked like in her evil form. But when she was seen in the good, she was gorgeous and wore all white linens. So I found that to be a very crazy and fun part of the research. I had actually known about Perkta, but I didn't know as much as I do now. And I didn't know of the connection between Perkta and the Krampus. So I thought that was interesting. They always, and I'm sure there was some Christian hands involved there as well, they would say that the lore goes that one of her feet were of a goose. And the reason is, some people might say, well, what's that have to do with anything? The Christians oftentimes would depict devils and demons and sinister beings with having rooster or goose feet. And it was symbolic of evil. And these beings could even look, even in her beautiful form. Now, I didn't read this. I'm just saying myself, even in her beautiful form, you might hear something where she was in all white and gorgeous, but one foot was of a goose foot. And that's to always symbolize that no matter how pure or beautiful she would appear to you, she still carries the evil with her, and she's able to be recognized by her foot to symbolize her evil qualities. So very interesting research on that. She comes from the Alpine area of Germany, and like once again, she was celebrated by pagans there. And, you know, that's really about it. She's same time period, which is interesting as well. She was celebrated around midwinter, the 12 days between what we would know as Christmas and another holiday called the Epiphany. And it's 12 nights long. And she would appear usually on the last night, the 12th night, to judge the good and the damned. Daniel, I turn it over to you, my brother.
I see. Well, thank you very much for that fascinating and horrifying lecture about the Krampus and its potential origins. Now, if you've been listening to our show for a couple of years now, you'll know that Frater and I both like to come with our own sort of perspective on these particular topics. And I love hearing, you know, the information and the history that you dig up on these topics. And then I like to sort of double back, circle around with my own sort of metaphysical, philosophical perspective on these particular topics as well. So I put together just a very short and concise lecture about my understanding of the Krampus entity and its origins. So it's similar also, Frater, that you mentioned, you know, potential origin dating back before the inception of this creature that we're all so familiar with, because I have one of my own, although it's a little bit different. I do think that this egregor, in a sense, that we're dealing with is sort of derived from something else. So let me just go ahead and dive right in.
Yeah, please do.
So the real, I'm doing air quotes, the real Krampus entity behind the creature that we're all so familiar with was actually based on a being known as the Cairnanos. The Cairnanos. So the Krampus is known, obviously, resembling sort of a hybrid human, sort of a hybrid elk. But this being, this Cairnanos, was actually a fourth density elemental, if you're familiar with the concept of nature spirits. This elemental, known as the winter spirit, is what he was called. So the Cairnanos, the winter, actually a very peaceful creature that had the ability to manipulate physics and reality, more so targeting nature in sort of a cosmically balanced way. So this being was known to manifest physically from its own sort of alternate reality and sort of, in a sense, make beneficial changes to the nature surroundings where these stories come from, which this particular version of its origin, the Cairnanos, comes from ancient Ireland, for those interested. This is sort of like an Ireland lore about a nature spirit. So then getting back to what Frater said, to sort of like a recap on some of the points he made, where does the Krampus as we know it come from? So the Krampus as we know it was created and associated to religion. Once religion spread and became more common amongst humans then skews the Cairnanos into fitting an archetype of polarity, right? Because we always need that duality. So as religion started to influence society in a more polarized way, humans and religion manifested Saint Nicholas, aka Saint you know, Santa Claus, which resembled a more benevolent giving entity, but was strictly a mythological creation and a byproduct of one of the more polarized aspects of the Christianity and religion as a whole. And I know that you mentioned some of those similar ideas as well. Now, because society needs contrast and polarity, the peaceful nature spirit known as Cernunnos was bent and skewed into a malevolent horned devil that serves as the opposite polarity of St. Nicholas. So in summary, the way that I understand it is that the Krampus doesn't actually exist as a child-eating holiday monster, but rather he is a fictional villain derived from a peaceful elemental known as Cernunnos. Now, before, Frater had mentioned also, which I find to be very interesting, Frater, you said that there might actually be many of these creatures. And I feel like I can explain why I think that is. This is another topic that we've covered. I think it was on season one, actually. So when people say that they think they've seen a Krampus, or maybe even multiple of them, and as to why that they exist in other regions, is I actually think that, sure, maybe there could actually be some type of egregor that's manifested as a result of the collective consciousness in the lore and the mythology of the Krampus. But what I think that people are actually seeing and they're actually encountering face-to-face is the actual Wendigos, which we have talked about in the past. And if you look at it, a lot of the evidence is there. When they, you know, they have the antlers, they're known to be very large, they have claws, and they're often seen mostly, you know, most commonly in the winter. So that's another probable sort of, you know, speculation that I'm making here, that if people are seeing something that's Krampus-like, you know, they very well could be the Wendigos, which they look similar to appearance. But to sort of, you know, close my point here, I think that oftentimes when we have something like a mainstream icon like this, a public figure, I do think that they are always derived from something more organic and more natural, whether it is an elemental or, you know, we have lots of other spiritual entities that come from other densities and dimensions that I think that we sort of create our own sort of public, public identity of what it is, but it really is derived from something else. So in this particular case, I came across this nature spirit, a peaceful nature spirit called the Cernunnos. So what do you think about that?
Well, I think it's very interesting. I mean, this is one of the ones, you know, a lot of times people ask me, you know, with all the different topics that we cover and subjects that we touch base on, do you believe in every one of the ones you cover? Not at all. No. I mean, there are ones that I absolutely think are possible or plausible. There's ones that I find interesting, though I don't necessarily buy into. And the Krampus, sure, for me, I don't think is a real being either. I think that it is the product of, you know, hundreds of years of evolution to, as you said, stories or you know, attributes of other spirits or entities that have kind of been accumulated and put together into what is now known as the Krampus. Because even the Krampus itself has taken many changes. At first, like I said, it was celebrated as its own deity and it had nothing to do with St. Nicholas, and then it got tied to St. Nicholas and became this thing. Well, they work hand in hand as partners and they have a day apart from one another because the church wanted to abolish it altogether, but they weren't able to. So they found a way of saying, well, okay, instead of it just being this pagan monster, this pagan deity, well, what if he works with St. Nicholas and he just takes care of the bad children? And he smacks them with sticks and kind of beats them around a little bit and, you know, punishes them. It's like a spanking. And then as time went on and the religion became more extremist, and then it was, you know, well, let's change the dates. Let's make Santa Claus. Let's get rid of St. Nick. Let's say that they're not together at all, and this creature is individual, and it's almost a creature of the devil. And this creature comes out and not only beats children, but bites them and murders them and eats them and takes them away or drags them to hell, which, folks, you've heard me talk about in other shows. Hell is a Christian concept. Hell actually never existed prior to Christianity. There was, right, Gehinnom or Sheol or other places that were attributed to being hell-like, but in every other culture, hell wasn't like hell is in Christianity. It was somewhere that you went for penance and you would serve a certain amount of time and then you would be released from that hell back to wherever your original source was. But then Christians came up with the idea of taking Gehinnom, which was a Jewish concept of what we would attribute to hell, and calling it hell and saying it's eternal. So then you start getting these concepts of it's a creature of hell and it drags bad children back to hell with it. So now it's not only a thing of you better be good throughout the year so that you get your presence and you're not taken away by this evil devil creature, but it was also another way of fear-mongering, you know, adherence to follow the word of God. So that's where it gets a little tricky as well, is when your hands get involved into it, it changes and it changes and it changes, and it ends up going from a partnership to individualist evil. And like I said, you have these, it looks like a satyr, half man, half goat. But when you look at a lot of the depictions of other people, and especially in Germany and things, they're not depicting it necessarily as a goat man. They're depicting it like a giant Sasquatch looking creature, just kind of evil looking, or very, you know, frightening features. I don't want to say evil. But whenever you try to give it the attributes of a satyr, it walks on hind legs like a goat, and it's just ways slowly and surely adding these things to make it more evil, more sinister, and more something that someone should fear. And that's easy to then say it's pagan beliefs and it's pagan gods, and they bring this thing here, so it brings fright, and then it brings shock value. So that's whenever, you know, you have pop culture get a hold of it and make movies out of it and things of
that. And they villainize it. Haven't you noticed how a lot of these things are villainized and demonized?
Exactly, and that's never the way that it was. I mean, it's the same way, and I attribute it to, you know, the daemons or daimons, and Greek daimons mean replete with wisdom, beings that would help you and help you advance and teach you how to do things. And then it became daemons, which still replete with wisdom, and these spirits that you would work with and grow from. And then Christianity got a hold of it and they said, no, they are demons, and they changed.
And they villainized it.
They villainized it. They're not here to help you. They're not here to teach you. You don't ever talk to them. If you talk to them, you'll go to this hell that we just created and you'll burn and all these things, and they're evil creatures, and you don't touch them, and they look like this or that, and then they added these attributes and these backstories and changing narratives to make it something scary, to villainize anything that's culturally different than their culture or their belief structure that they were building and have built for themselves.
Right.
And that's what I look at as the Krampus, is it was something celebrated. It had a backstory. It was, you know, cultures had something that they, similar to our Christmas, you know, they said that there's this creature that would punish bad children and it would reward good, or the good would just be rewarded by continuing to go without being beaten by sticks. You know, there's these things, but then over time it became more sinister and sinister. And if you went back in time and talked to the original pagan people that celebrated Krampus and told them what it's become now, I think they would be shocked and appalled and say, absolutely not. That is not the spirit that we celebrated and gave festival to and gave offerings to. It's just been heavily taken out of context. But on that same note, folks, I will say that I appreciate the fact of the pagan culture standing up when the church came in and said, we want to, you know, get rid of this character. They did fight back, and there was enough pushback that they couldn't just abolish it and get rid of it. They had to partner it with Saint Nick, then partner it, or unpartner it, but keep it around still. It stayed in the collective unconscious amongst all of us, and it's still, hundreds of years later, is talked about, celebrated, festivals, movies. And even though it might have gotten blown out of proportion, it keeps the energy of this being alive. Whether it is real or not, it stays with us, and I appreciate that. I mean, there's even festivals called Krampuslauf, which is Krampus Run, and people dress up as Krampuses, and they run around and just stir up shit the whole day. They scare children, they get drunk, they run around and get rowdy and bother people and disorderly conduct type deal, you know, like, but it's all in good fun. It's thousands of people can dress up like this mythological creature and run around and be rowdy. And it's a way, I think, that we've always been able to keep our animalistic side and keep that pagan roots that we all originally stem from, whether you admit to it or not. It's a way of keeping it alive, even though distorted.
No, absolutely. I totally agree. And I'm down with anybody, you know, communities out there that celebrate, you know, this entity, this creature, in whatever way that they understand it. I am a big fan of sort of like the origin stories of these things. And although yours was completely terrifying, I wanted to ask you about, you know, just in the general sense, man, how familiar are you with the concept of like elementals, earth elementals? This could be like a whole episode, by the way.
I've worked with elementals before. I mean, you have the common misconception is a lot of times people talk about elementals. They talk about fire beings and water and air and earth, and that is partially right, but there is crossbreeds in between, and people will think about four classes of elementals, but that's not exactly true. There's many more than that, and elementals can be looked at in different ways. They can be looked at as just spirits you work with, but they are also physical beings, and I know to a lot of people out there, they're like, this guy's on one.
No, they are physical.
But they are physical beings, and the difference between elementals and regular spirits that you work with, a spirit or even a human being, depending upon your belief system, once you die, the body will fall, the body will rot, the psyche will live on for a little while. That's often the spirits that you hear yelling, help me, or no, please, please, all of these things, and ghosts that you interact with, a lot of that is the remnants of a spirit's psyche falling from it. So you have the body in the ground, the psyche floating around as a ghost-like apparition, and then you have the soul or the spirit, and that goes on to other dimensions and other planes. Sometimes it can return, so I don't want to say all ghosts are simply psyche remnants,
right.
But there are two different classifications of ghosts. Most people don't understand or know that. The reason I bring this up is elementals, like human beings, die, but they don't go up to like a heaven or anything like that. They actually go right back into the energy stream of their own current and then are born again as a new elemental. They don't have never-ending lives like a spirit. They don't live forever. That individual elemental will die. It will be gone. There is no soul that goes from it. It is just that being. And once it dies, its source is recycled and brought back again. Kind of like we would be in reincarnation, but there is no thing that goes on beyond it. It's just that they all return back to their own river and then are born again, and it never ends. Now, elementals can live within plants. They live within rivers. They live within the rocks of the streams. And I know that sounds crazy, folks, but think about the miracle of plants growing. If you plant a plant and you water it and it grows, you just think, okay, it's the sun, it's water, it's all these different things that science has said it is, but there's these beings that live within the plants that help the plant grow, that take care and maintain the plants. You have, the sylphs, you have the undines, you have the gnomes, you have the salamanders, and each one of those corresponds with one of the four main classes of elementals. But what most people don't understand is you can work with them in ritual and actually summon them to help teach you things and help better you in life, because you can start to become more familiar. If you reach out to plant deities and plant elementals and start working with them, you will start to have a greater vast knowledge of plant life and how to work with the ground and the soil and do things that you didn't know how to do before. Now, you'll still have to work at it, but you'll start to learn it at a rapid pace and start to remember things you didn't know. And the reason I bring this up is one of the misconceptions is that there's only these four races, but there's a crossbreed between. You can work with water, fire, earth, and air, but you can work with fire of water, the air of water, the earth of water, the water of water. And I know this is deep. This is occultism, folks, so we're not going to go too deep into it. But you can work with four different subdivisions within that division. So technically, there would be 16 categories of elementals. And whenever you hear someone say plant allies, I have plant allies, especially in occultism. I work with plant allies. I work with mugwort. I work with henbane. I work with, you know, even psilocybin mushrooms or muscimol that's in the fly agaric, toadstools. These are plant allies. These chemicals are said to be facilitated by elementals. And it's just a very interesting concept. They are real. They do exist. They are in everything around us. They make this world run, this physical world, and you can work with them.
I completely agree. And I like the more sort of expanded, sort of vast perspective you have on the concept of elementals. And if you study any sort of either mythology or lore in any sort of subculture on our planet, we all have some sort of identity or definition of what these sort of, like, in a sense, nature spirits are. And I do think that there are subclasses and subcategories, and I do think that they are physical just like us. But like I mentioned earlier, I think that they're actually in sort of like the fourth density frequency, where they're not exactly in our physical reality, but rather in their own sort of subdimension of it.
Correct.
And right. And there's actually a summoning ritual that I discovered in 2016. I don't exactly know what all the steps are, although I am talking to our good friend Natasha about, you know, possibly working with this particular exercise where you can actually summon the Keranos through a very disciplined, long-term exercise of working in nature, in the woods, under certain circumstances and doing certain things, including meditation, to actually sort of, in a sense, manifest this creature. And I do believe that you probably know more about it than I do, but there's probably a variety of different sort of summoning exercises, manifesting rituals to bring sort of elementals present if you would ever want to encounter one in your life.
Yeah, I think it's a very powerful subject and something that, you know, folks, if you're listening out there, and I've said this time and time again, it's not to beat a dead horse, but if you want to have interaction with cryptids, with aliens, with ghosts and spirits, with daemons and demons and planetary and celestial beings, you can do so. And you can do so a lot easier than you might think. Now, it doesn't mean that there's not danger to it, but it is something that you can do. And once again, I said this so many times, someone will say, well, it's never happened to me, or I don't believe it, but I would like to see it. Well, first, you have to be open in order to be able to receive it. So you don't necessarily have to believe it, but be open to receive it. The second thing is you have to put yourself out there. If you want to have contact with a spirit, but yet you never take time to try to talk to spirits, you never go anywhere where the energy currents are powerful to be able to encounter spirits, and you never take yourself out of your normal everyday flow of job and everything else, then most likely you're never going to have it happen. But if you take the time to perfect your mind, and you take the time to go out and actually interact with beings, it won't happen every time. But I can promise you from personal experience, time and time and time again, it will happen. Now, one of the most powerful things you can do, and Dan just said a part of that, if you go out into the woods to try to connect with the elementals, but it doesn't have to be just elementals, but certainly we can use it as an example. If you go out with a clear mind, with strengthened abilities of your psychic abilities by meditation and by breath work, and you can sharpen your skills of being able to access the higher portions of your own ability, and it's not as hard as you'd think, it just takes discipline. You go out into the woods by yourself. I know it's scary, but do it at nighttime. Go out to the woods. You can do it during the day. Elementals you might want to do during the day, but go out into the woods, sit, clear your mind, and meditate for a while. And then speak out loud to them and let them know you want to have an interaction. And then sit there in silence and wait. Not 2 minutes, not 5 minutes. It might be an hour or two. But just be in awe of the beauty of nature and what is around you and how blessed you are to be experiencing this gift of life and nature and wind and water and plants and dirt, all of it. And if you have that appreciation and you open yourself up to it, more often than not, something will come. It has happened time and time again for me. And one of the biggest things is you have to be true of what you're trying to do. And the other one is you can't go with all of your friends. People say, I want to have this happen, and they'll take five buddies with them. Well, the problem is you might be very in tune with what you want. And you might be very sincere with what you want to do. But the other three or four friends that you have no abilities. They don't believe. They're loud. They're distracting. Or they're right. naysayers. Or they just carry low vibration.
They think it's like a joke. And they don't take it seriously.
Or they're dealing with their own shit in life. And they're at a lower vibrational stage in their life. And you're trying to be at a higher one. And they're dragging and fucking the whole process up. If you go by yourself, then if it doesn't go through, it's either wasn't the right time or the only one to blame is yourself. But if you do go sincerely, I promise you, and I do this all the time in the paranormal world, people think I'm crazy for traveling hours on end to famous locations and staying there 100% alone. Aren't you scared? No, that is the reason I am there, is to contact these beings. And I will sit and I will ground myself. I will clear my mind with meditation, and then I will speak out loud as I would a good long lost friend and say, I am here to speak with you, and I've traveled very far to communicate. If you wish to come out and talk to me, I would love to talk with you. If you choose not to, I understand. You are not bound to do anything that you do not wish, but I sincerely would like to make contact, and I am here all weekend. Feel free to talk to me in whatever ways you choose, however you choose, when you choose. And then I just continue to talk out loud to them, to interact with them. And you wouldn't believe, folks, the shit that'll happen. And I've taken groups out and done this and showed them how to do it properly. Taking away the cameras, taking away all the fancy gear, taking away your expectations, and taking away your need for clout chasing to have something to go back and slap on Facebook. Eliminate all that bullshit and go there for true purposes. And sit down with someone like myself who can teach you how to connect with these beings. And you will have interactions and experiences that will alter and change the fabric of your life and the path of your life. But it won't happen if you don't take the steps to do it. So long-winded, that is a way of saying, if you truly want to have something happen, then take the steps to do it. Cut out the bullshit. Stop making excuses. And fear is merely an illusion that you allow to be in your life to pull and hold you back from all the greatness that you could achieve. So if you can learn to eliminate that, you are endless, ladies and gentlemen. And who knows? Maybe there's even a Krampus out there that you could get in contact with. And maybe you can summon it. Maybe we're wrong and it is a true being and it's not just a thought form or an egregore. Maybe it is something that you can channel. And no one will know unless they tried. I've never personally tried. But you could. And who knows, maybe you'll come back with an experience that you'll carry with you the rest of your life that no one ever might believe, or you might never even share with anybody. But for the rest of your days, you might say, holy shit, I channeled the spirit of this mythological creature, and it came through and talked to me. And nothing was ever the same.
I completely agree.
And real quick, folks, what I would say is one of the things I talked about was the elementals and the different forms. I would insist anybody out there listening that is interested in this and wants to look more into it, the great Paracelsus wrote a paper called The Four Elementals and Their Spirits. And that's where I have a good bit of the knowledge that I have from, not only from practice, obviously, but that's where I first read that concept of the spirits living within the plants and how they interact. And it's a great thesis. It's not a book. It's a thesis that he wrote, you know, many, many, many moons ago. And Paracelsus was an absolute genius. And he really stuck with me, his work there. And then I started to work with it. There's another great book that is from Frater Barabbas, which is a renowned occultist. He's actually going to be on my show, Knights of the Nephilim, in a few weeks. He wrote a book, The Four Elementals. I don't remember the exact title, but The Witch's Handbook to the Four Elementals. And it'll give you exact formula and praxis and practice of how to contact, channel, and work specifically with elementals. And this man is a genius, and he is very different than other occultists. He's built his own structure of practice, how to summon and conjure spirits, and it is very powerful and one of my most looked forward to guests of the season. So if you're interested in Dan's topic of elementals, look into it. And if you're interested in the Krampus, you've got your information for this evening. Really, that's all I had for you folks. Daniel, you have any last thoughts on tonight's topic?
No, I think it's a very fascinating thing to discuss, creatures and entities like this. You know, we're all allowed to assign our own beliefs, definitions, and meanings to them. So I hope you take the information that we've given you, play with it, research it, you know, and if you're interested about potentially, you know, working with the Keratinos, there is an exercise for that, which I don't have all of the pieces for to discuss here on the air, but I'm going to put it together. So if anybody wants it, let me know and I can see if I can forward you that information. But remember what Frater said, you have to be pure of intent, clear in intent, and really care about what you're doing and put aside any of the sort of like any sort of a public sort of need for recognition and acknowledgement about what you're doing or any of the results that you find. It really has to be sort of like a quest, a journey that you're doing for the actual experience of it and nothing else. Mm-hmm. So if you're pure of intent, then I'll make sure you can get a hold of this exercise and an experiment with it. Other than that, I will end this episode by saying I am Blackfoot Native American. And if you celebrate Thanksgiving, well, have a happy holiday.
Happy holidays out there, folks. Enjoy time with your family. Even if you don't believe in what Thanksgiving stands for or anything like that, it doesn't have to symbolize, you know, what had happened in the past. It can simply symbolize time with your family, spending conversation and good food, and celebrating the gift of life while you are here.
And that's
just
right.
Enjoying company. So enjoy time with your families out there, folks. If you don't have family or anybody to celebrate it with, try to find the silver lining in the dark cloud. Sometimes it can be lonely, folks, but don't let it get to you. You are never alone. And there's, you know, always a way of reaching out to people to talk to them if you're feeling a certain way. So we know that sometimes this is a great time of year for folks. Other times it is not great for others, but you always have friends out there. Don't think that you don't. Celebrate the holidays, whether it with family or be it yourself, and find the best in every day and every moment. And live the best life you can, because if you don't, then Parkta will come and find you. Ladies and gentlemen, this is another episode of Celestial Oddities the Pong. Have wonderful holidays. We'll catch you next time.